ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
But when it's misplaced, as it is when there are illusory material bodies. Illusory because, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, nasato vidite pavo, pavo vidite sita, ubayorapi drishtam tastonios tatvadarshini. The great seers understand that there's a reality to spirit because it's permanent, it never changes, whereas matter is constantly changing. It's always in flux. It's not substantial. And the forms that I'm attracted to here in this material world that are made of matter are insubstantial, and therefore my attraction to them is illusory. So this punsa striya maituni bhavamitam. And Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita how by glancing over the material creation, a living entity, an ordinary living entity, becomes entangled in it. He says in the second chapter, jayato vishayam sansangas teshu pajayate. So this first line of the verses that describe the process through which one may become attached to the material energy start with the word jayato, which means to contemplate, which is a particular word with a particular meaning. And that is that one looks at something and considers there's something in it for me. It's not just looking at something, but one may have a predisposition to try to find something that's beneficial for oneself. And one does have that predisposition. It's natural. And when that's misplaced, and looking at the material forms, one may see a form that looks attractive, that one may then think, because of one's conditioning, this is for me. Let this become mine. This is contemplation. Jayato. I look at it and I think, I can possess that. I can own it. And this is the conditioning of the material mind, is to own or dominate the material energy. To see it and think, this can become mine. And this causes a problem for the living entity. Because there are a lot of things in the world. I mean, how many things are there in the world? Pretty many. But some of those things are my things. And why are they my things and not just things? Because I looked at them, I contemplated them, and said, these are my things. I paid for them, or I stole it, you know, I got it, somehow or other. It's mine. And now a thing is no longer a thing, it's my thing. And now it actually becomes a problem for me. Why? Because jayato vishayam pumsam sangas teshu vijayate. Because I form a sangha with it. Sangha means sa anga. Anga means a part, like my thumb is an anga of my hand. And now I look at things which are dual matter in this world, and I think, this thing is now mine. I claim it to be mine. And now I have a sangha with it. It becomes part of me. And because it's not really part of me, I'm only claiming that it's part of me, now I have a problem with it. For instance, Aditya Narayan Prabhu parked outside. His car was right out of the parking lot. And we may now be sitting here peacefully, and then we hear a car come careening around the corner and up the driveway, and we hear it sideswipe one of the cars. We can ascertain by triangulation that it was a Deep Narayan's car, AC does. So now he runs to the window and he looks out and he's perspiring and his heartbeat is elevated. But he sees it's not actually his car, it was Driscoll's car. And now Deep Narayan Prabhu feels much better. And the anxiety is transferred to Trista. You know, he feels anxiety, he's perspiring, and he remembers he forgot to pay for the insurance. And it's a problem now. But a car is just metal and wood. Well, it's not much wood. Maybe it's a Lexus or some wood. Metal and glass and whatever it is. It's material elements that are mined out of the ground in the earth somewhere, and somebody shaped them, put them together, and said, you know, you really could fit into this car. In fact, at the car dealership, they said, "That's really you." And people look at that, "That's really me." And Prabhupada mentions this, people identify themselves as their car. Like he said in Calcutta, somebody's pulling a tela, that they pull these rickshaws by hand. Actually, they run barefoot through the streets of... And so he said he saw somebody behind in an automobile and he's yelling at the tela, he's saying, "Hey, tela." He's calling him the rickshaw because, "Hey, rickshaw," because you are the rickshaw and so forth. And people are their cars. And someone said, "You know, this is me, this is my car." And in this way, I identify with everything around me and I say, "This is mine, this is me." And in the same way, I identify with the body as me and I say, "This is me," but it's not. Krishna certifies that we're very much different from the body, and real knowledge means Shetraknam Chatunam Viti Sarva Shetri Shibharata Shetra Shetraknayorgana Yatashkana Matambhava. That knowledge means to know the difference between the field and the knower of the field, to become a witness and say, "Oh, this body is just a biological robot," or as they said in Star Trek, a carbon unit. And this is not me. And the self-realized soul is described in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, his vision, naiva kinchit karomiti yuto manita tattvavit paschan shudvam svishan jikram ashram kacchan supanchasan pralapan vishnam grinan unnishan vinishan api indriyad indriyad deshu vartanta iti tarin. The self-realized person thinks, "I have actually nothing to do with the workings of this biological machine. It's eating, it's seeing, it's grasping, it's accepting things from other people, it's hearing, and so forth. But all of these activities are going on just as much as a dishwasher goes on. When you turn the dial to a certain number and you put in the soap, you have a dishwasher, close the door, push the button, and it just starts to move. So simply the body's moving like that. Nonetheless, somehow or other, because of my connection, my sangha, I say, "This is me, this is mine." And this is the way in which one becomes entangled in the material world. And one looks out into material nature and considers all these things to be for my enjoyment. And the solution to this is to understand to whom they belong. And that's mentioned in the Sri Upanishad. Isavasya vidam sarva kincha jagat kam jagat tena tyaktena vimujita lakrita kasya suttama. Everything animate or inanimate within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. And this, the power of glancing, as is mentioned in this verse, this last verse we read, thus Lord Shiva saw the woman, every part of his body was beautifully formed, and the beautiful woman also looked at him. Therefore, thinking that she was attracted to him, Lord Shiva became very much attracted to her. And the Bhagavatam gives this information. You won't find it in the New York Times. You won't find it at CNN or any novels. The Bhagavatam in the first nine cantos especially comes out and helps to extricate us from this misconception that by cohorting with the material energy in its various forms, that'll actually find prosperity and happiness. And this is especially drawn out in the pastime of Paranjana. Paranjana. The story of Paranjana is given by Narada Muni, and he describes to King Prachinabarhi an allegory in which a young man is walking in a beautiful park during springtime, and then he meets an unmarried woman. And he then becomes attracted to her features. She becomes attracted by his speech, in which he's talking to her in such a way as to attract her mind. And then they come together, and there's a explanation of their whole life together and how it ends with Arjuna leaving his body and the way in which they have to be separated and so forth. And one gets to see the whole scenario, what happens from beginning to end. This is always a good idea for transcendentalists to have perspective on what actually happens when I interact with material nature, when I contemplate it, or when I try to own it. You have to look at the whole scenario, not just the immediate idea that I'll get something from it, because that's in the mode of passion. And that doesn't end well. It ends with misery. It's like nectar at the beginning and poison at the end. And so one has to be careful what one looks at in this world and how one looks at it. There's an old saying that we don't see the world the way it is, we see the world the way we are. And it's interesting here in this purport that Prabhupada mentions that Lord Shiva was observing every part of the woman's body, and she was also glancing at him with restless eyes. Thus Lord Shiva thought that she was also attracted to him. So this is a function. Of course, he's showing an example of how these things happen. As I noted at the beginning, this is not to misjudge Shiva, not that he's bewildered. This is taking place, a special pastime between the Lord and the Supreme, and the Lord Shiva. But it shows how one may misinterpret the signals that come from the material nature. There's an account of a man who gets on a train, and he's riding along, and a beautiful woman gets on the train in the same compartment. Then more and more people get in, and the man glances at the woman, and he thinks, oh, she's really attractive. And then, as the contemplation grows within a few moments, he starts to become attached to her. And then they go into a tunnel, and the electricity goes out, the lights go out, and so it's complete darkness in there. And people are going along in the cabin, and he feels that somebody's touching his arm. His arm is touching somebody else's arm, and he imagines now that that's that woman. And then he thinks, well, actually, you know, she maybe moved closer to me. And then he thinks, well, actually, she probably likes me. And then he thinks that, well, if she likes me, I like her. You know, what will probably happen is that we're going to get married. And my parents are going to be really proud to see such a beautiful bride. And all my friends are going to come to the wedding. Not only that, she's probably wealthy. And I'm going to get a house. We're going to have a house together with our children. I know what they're going to look like because I can imagine the composite of her and myself coming out biologically in this world. This is wonderful. And he's feeling elation. And his body's stimulated in different ways. That this is going to be such a grand event. And then they burst out of the tunnel and the light comes into the cabin, and there's a decrepit old man that actually, and he jumps back. And, oh, how horrible. And I touched this person, and the woman is somehow gone. She's not even on the train anymore. Went to another cabin. And so the ways in which I glance, I furtively glance at the material nature, and I imagine that the material nature is glancing back at me favorably, thinking, I interpret that. Because my false ego, in other words, to revisit this modern-day mantra, I don't see the world the way it is, I see the world the way I am. And this is consistent with our philosophy, and that is mentioned in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that one becomes conditioned by the modes of material nature, and then sees the world in a particular way, and interprets it in a particular way because it gets filtered. Consciousness has various aspects. One of them is perception. So we perceive only selectively in this world. because you have to actually be conscious of a thing in order to perceive it properly. For instance, you could be sitting in the Bhagavatam class and the sound vibration is actually hitting your ear, because there's a way in which, by my vocal cords moving, there's air that is being stimulated and it's hitting your eardrum. And then there's a nerve that's sending a signal to the brain. But you may be thinking, I shouldn't have posted that thing on Facebook earlier, because I'm going to be really in big trouble when people find out that I put that up there and there's no way to get it back, and I'm not sure even what my password is, and going through all these different machinations, and then suddenly you realize, oh yeah, I'm sitting in class, and the sound is going to make it, and somebody says, so do you have any comments? And it's like, not right now. Because I didn't really hear anything. I didn't perceive anything. And first of all, you have to perceive certain things from the environment by being aware of them, by being consciously aware of what they are. And then there's an interpretation process. I take in certain stimuli from the environment, and according to the conditioning of my ego, I then interpret it in various ways. So this is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, that people in the mode of goodness see things in a particular way. They see living entities as spiritual, and they see that there's a spirit within each body. A person in the mode of passion sees people as separate entities, not part of the original divine source, but just they're all working hard in various ways, and people in the mode of ignorance have no idea what's going on. And they're getting the same information from the environment, but they interpret it in different ways. So if one is conditioned to think that I can enjoy the material world, and one has an optimism for enjoying the material world, then one may go about looking at things and thinking, these are for me, and may and misinterpret that the material nature is favorably reciprocating with me. However, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita helps us to manage our expectations. And this is a very important point. We have to manage our expectations so that we can interpret our environment in an accurate way. So, companies do this. There's a part of marketing in which the marketing department will help to manage people's expectations so that they don't expect too much from a product. Because if people get your product and there's too much expectation, then they'll be disappointed. So Krishna says categorically in the Bhagavad Gita that the material world is a place of suffering from top to bottom. Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avirchano arjuna. This is a place of birth and death from top to bottom, and it's called also Dukkhalaya. It's a place of suffering. So don't expect that your glancing at material nature is going to bear any favorable result. Don't even look at it in that way. Don't look at it and think that there's something in this for me. Because from top to bottom, there's really nothing in the world for you. However, and also, if one looks at the world in a way that I want to enjoy it, there's a lot of competition. This is also one of the sad aspects of material life, is that there are many competitors who are equally invested in trying to get something out of the same energy that you might want to get something out of, and you have to fight with them. However, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Jeev Krishna Das Abhishras Kolito Artukulam. If you just say that I will not interact with the material world in this way, but I'll see myself as a servant, and I'm a servant of God, and I'm using everything here to serve Him, so then there'll be no more discord for you in this world, and you'll be welcome wherever you go as a servant, because there's very little competition for the position of being a servant. And you'll be properly situated because that's the way you are, and you'll actually experience happiness. So from this entire pastime, or at least from this small segment today, a lesson that we can revisit is in purifying our expectations, managing our expectations for what one can actually get from the material world, and developing a kind of pessimism about material life, not expecting anything from it except for more entanglement, and at the same time readjusting one's vision to see how to use everything in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those are a few comments on this section, and now, because we have just 5 minutes left, we'll take a few reflections to try to fluff things out a little bit more. So please be proactive in giving reflections or questions. Unless you're thinking about Facebook, in which case.
I like the point where you said there's so many things, but we identify certain things as my things, and that makes a problem for us because we identify it as mine.
Yes, and we may misinterpret. Like, this is one of the choice aspects of this of today's purport. Is Lord Shiva is looking at the woman, and Lord Shiva thought that she was also attracted to him. So there's a story about a Muslim mullah. And a Muslim mullah, and he goes around, he travels and he gives classes in the village about the Quran. And the Muslim mullahs, they keep this long beard. He was an elderly man, so he had this long white beard. So he's sitting in the village and he's giving these talks every day, kind of a saptaha. People would gather around, they'd listen. And one of the women in the audience, every day while he was speaking, would begin to weep. Tears would profusely come down her face. And he was feeling a little gratified that, wow, my words are really potent. So after the 7 days of his talking, he was mingling with the crowd, speaking with the different villagers, and he happened to be introduced to this woman. He said, you know, I really appreciate that you came to all these classes, and I just want to know from you what moved you so much about my speaking, because I saw that you were crying, and that really affected me. And she said, oh yes, of course, but it wasn't exactly your speech. It's just that, you see, in my family, we raise goats, and we have our favorite billy goat. And he has a beard just like yours. And when you're speaking, the beard was moving like this and that, and it reminded of our favorite Bill, and he died last month. And I was so sad about that. When I saw the beard moving, I became so upset, and I was crying. So we may interpret a glance. Somebody looks at us, we may assume, oh, she's attracted to me, he's attracted to me, he's going to protect me, she's going to you know, exalt me as a great hero, and so forth. This is misinterpretation. Don't be taken in by that. It's actually at the end, when you sort it all out, you find out, it's like, they didn't mean that at all. He wanted to take my money. Or, you know, they were actually, they had a gun under there, and they were going to rob me or something like that. This is the way that one becomes cheated by the material energy, is by misinterpretation. Thank you.
What are some of the best ways we can develop that servitor perspective and mentality?
One is by hearing about great servants and emulating them. Because the servants, there are plenty of examples of servants, and we can hear of their qualities and also of their intentions and so forth, and we can emulate them. For instance, there were, you know, in history there have been so many examples of those who had the service mentality. For instance, Dadichi. Dadichi was such a great soul, such a great hero, that when Lord Vishnu was advising the demigods and told them that you'll need to go to Dadichi and ask him for some charity, what kind of charity? His body. You need his bones, and then they would form this thunderbolt, by which Indra could kill Dhritarashtra. So then they went to Didichi, and we're all sitting there going, what's he going to do? And so he gives a little bit of protest because he wants to hear the signs of self-realization. And he says, yeah, sure, I'll give you my body. Because why wouldn't I? It's for a higher cause. And then you hear that, you think, yeah, so why shouldn't I give? I mean, maybe I'm not ready right now to give my bones, but at least I can, you know, hand over a little cash or something. Well, whatever, you know, we hear from these great souls and it makes sense. And they become heroes to us. I've always really appreciated Judd Barrett. When I hear the story of Judd Barrett, and I just think of somebody who's like, okay, enough's enough. I've seen it before, I've been through this, I became a deer because I really blew it. And I can relate to that and think like, how many times am I going to be fooled by this stuff? And then now it's like, all right, I'm out. I sign out, I'm checking the box, I'm not participating in this anymore. You may not become Judd Barrett externally, but internally you can become Judd Barrett. You can look at him and say, I like that. I like that mentality. I'm going to follow him. That's why those examples are there in the Bhagavatam for us to look at, and not to imitate, but to emulate, to follow in their footsteps. And Prabhupada mentions this in the story of Dhruva Maharaj, the difference between imitating and following in footsteps. Following in footsteps means, according to your capacity right now, you enact the same principles that person did in your particular life. So, yes, following the acharyas. Anupashyati, yes.
Well, it just reminded me, I often reflect on, forgive me, it's one of the Goswamis, maybe Sanatana Goswami, that had the infestation of like worms or something in his skin. I don't know if that's correct personality, but he would actually just pick them back up. They would fall out and put them back in his body, saying like, basically, they're as entitled to this body as I am.
Vasudeva the leper. So, yeah, what's your point about him?
No, it's just something that I've often reflected on, that extremity of kind of detachment, not even seeing his body as, like you were mentioning, the sage.
Yeah, that's true. And those qualities are there. We can also see from Prabhupada's example, Tamalkrishna Maharaj asked him if he could kill his devotees. He said, no, not unless they attack. So we bring to the modern day perspective, we can see how Prabhupada dealt with, you know, bugs and stuff like that. So we have to take the composite to understand the new plot. Thank you very much. Go pray, man.
Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Hey, Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.